You've reached the Every Little Thing helpline. Please leave your wet and gushy message after the tone.
Hi Flora, this is Eric from Holland calling. Last summer I saw zeefonk, as we call it, in the sea. It's a little algae which lights up when it's moved. Why do they do that? And how do they do that? Could you shine a light on that? Thank you. Bye. Hello?
Hooten dog means sprunklin' de zay baby?
Do you know what you just said?
A traditional Dutch greeting, right?
Traditional, yes. Everybody says it here. Good day, my sparkling sea baby.
All right, sea baby. You called about some bioluminescent zeefonk. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, it's zeefonk. It's a translation from sea sparkle.
Oh, I love that. And you said in your message you had a zeefonk close encounter?
Yeah, so I was with a friend going for a day out to the sea. We had a break from our studies. So, yeah, that's really nice. Just to go there and to feel the wind of the sea. So we had some dinner, and then after dinner we went to throw a last look at the sea. And then we saw something we haven't never seen before. Lots of tiny bluish lights. It was like someone had forgotten their Christmas lights or something, and they were just getting flushed to the beach. Everywhere where it moves, it glows. So we thought we would give it a try and put our feet into the water. When you went into the water, when you're walking through the water, it starts lighting up around you. Really warm and subtle light. It's like walking amongst the stars or something. Yeah, we were just mesmerized.
So if you'd never seen it before, what did you think?
Yeah, I thought maybe there's some kind of chemical in the water. There was a ship that leaked something. I don't know, but it was too beautiful to be harmful. So we went back to the train. And when we were in the train, we had time to Google some things. And then we found out it was an algae that did this. But then I started to think about it more and more about why. Why does nature do it? And how does it do it?
Well, I have some good news, Eric. We found some answers.
All right.
Are you ready to get lit?
Yeah.
Hello?
Hello?
We plumbed the murky depths of the marine biology world to find someone who could answer your questions.
Hey, hi.
Hi, how are you?
And one name kept bubbling up.
My colleague, Edie Witter.
Edie Witter, yeah.
Edie Witter has been an influential figure.
She's done a lot of things to change the world of bioluminescence.
Edie Witter. She is like the Jacques Cousteau of GLOW, a bioluminescence luminary.
I'll go with that pun. Hi, Eric.
Hi, Edie.
Edie says she got bit by the bioluminescence bug as a young scientist back in the 1970s.
Right after I finished my PhD, I got an opportunity to make a series of dives.
She was diving off the coast of California in a special deep diving suit called WASP.
It doesn't have legs for walking on the bottom. It's just kind of got this pod with thrusters attached to it. So you fly around like Iron Man. It's incredibly heavy, and it's got like Michelin Man arms with claws on the end. And the first time I got in the suit, I discovered my arms wouldn't even reach both claws at the same time. because it was not made for somebody my size.
Yeah, so it seems like very hard work.
Edie says it was, but it was worth it because in this Iron Man suit, she could go deep.
And the very first dive I made, I went down to 880 feet, which seemed gargantuan.
Whoa. It must be really dark there because it's so deep.
It is deep, but it's not totally dark. When Edie peered through the little window on her suit, she couldn't believe her eyes.
I was just absolutely blown away. It was staggering. All around me was just, it looked like a starry, starry night in the desert, but all of those stars were swirling around.
Wow. It's like being inside Vincent van Gogh painting.
That's exactly how she described it.
Like Van Gogh's Starry Night. I was blown away by how much life was being revealed to me, and I wanted to know about it. You know, why is it there? What is it doing? Who are all these creatures making light, and then how are they making light? And why? Mostly why?
Sound familiar?
Really, really familiar.
Edie had the exact same questions you do, and she spent the last 40 years answering them. So, let's dive in for a little light show and tell.
Let's go.
Okay, so first, what is it?
Bioluminescence is just light made by living creatures. It comes in all colors, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, violet. It even extends into the ultraviolet a little bit and into the infrared a little bit.
And this living rainbow shows up on land in creatures like fireflies, glowworms, fungi. But down where it's wetter, the natural light show is better. Take it from me.
In every cubic meter of the ocean, surface to bottom and coast to coast, more than 50% of creatures that you collect are bioluminescent.
Wow, that's so much.
The Sealuminati game is strong.
Yeah, what if we could make something in our own body glow? How useful would that be?
What would you choose?
Maybe my a finger, or maybe the palm of my hand. If you're looking for something, you can just shine with your hand, and then you can find your keys when they're lost in the dark.
I'm more into the finger, giving someone the bioluminescent finger. You know, when you're on your bicycle at night and some car swerves a little too close.
Yeah, but in Holland, we have really good bicycle roads.
Of course you do.
So we don't have that problem.
No need to give anyone the bioluminescent finger in Holland.
No, just give a friendly wave.
So scientists think the reason we find more bioluminescence in the surf than on the turf is because that's where it first evolved. Bioluminescence started in marine bacteria around 400 million years ago. And it was a useful tool in the deep, dark depths. Creatures that had it had an advantage. So the glow did grow.
But what was the advantage?
Well, it depends on which illuminatical creature we're talking about, because different animals glow for different reasons.
All right.
There's things like viperfish, which have teeth so long that if they closed inside the mouth of the fish, it would actually impale its own brain.
I often bite my lip or my tongue, but my brain, that would be much more damage.
Yeah. You gotta see a picture of this thing. We'll put it on Spotify and Instagram at ELT Show, too.
Oh, wow. Really long teeth.
You see this tube coming off of its top fin?
Yeah, it's like one of those antennas when you have a radio-controlled car as a kid.
Yes. So that antenna glows at the tip and acts as a lure.
Ah.
They attract unsuspecting prey within biting distance of this living mousetrap of needle-sharp teeth.
And what do they lure? There's really small fish, I think.
Apparently they eat shrimp, squid, hermit crabs, anchovies, mackerel, and other little fish.
Hmm. Sounds like a pizza to me.
Hmm. Okay, so that's one way sea creatures use bioluminescence. But there's another really common use for it, and it's kind of counterintuitive. Lighting up is actually a really good way to hide in the ocean.
Predators in the ocean are, a lot of them are upward looking because they're looking for shadows to tell them that there's something up there to eat. And so a huge number of animals, trillions and trillions and trillions of fish, produce bioluminescence from their bellies that exactly matches the color and the intensity of downwelling sunlight to make themselves disappear. So upward looking predators can't see them. And if a cloud goes over the sun and dims the sunlight, the animal dims its bioluminescence belly lights, so it just remains perfectly matched.
Yeah, so they're just like imitating the sky. I only know camouflage as looking like a tree, looking like a grass or something. But of course, you can just hide your shadow.
Yeah, they just completely disappear. It's the ultimate cloaking device.
So bioluminescence can be used as a lure. It can be high-tech camo. But there's another use for this tool, which brings us to what you saw on the beach. So zayfonk is a bioluminescent plankton. In English, they're called dinoflagellates. And Edie said those dinoflagellates you saw were likely setting off an undersea burglar alarm.
So just the way your car has a burglar alarm on it with flashing lights and a blaring horn that's meant to attract attention and hopefully scare away a burglar, a lot of animals that have bioluminescence will use every light organ they've got in order to attract attention to whoever's attacking them. So something comes along and starts nibbling on a jellyfish, it lights up like crazy. And that something is now visible to something bigger that comes and attacks the attacker, and the jellyfish has a chance to get away.
It's like a signal that says, please come eat what's eating me.
Ah, all right.
And actually, Edie got an idea from seeing that burglar alarm in action. She thought maybe it could help her solve a problem at work. Maybe she could use it to attract the deep sea creatures she wanted to study, who are normally scared off by the headlights on subs and undersea cameras.
And so I developed the electronic jellyfish.
Which is what it sounds like?
It is, yes. And it could produce different types of bioluminescent-like displays.
Edie's electronic jellyfish set off a false burglar alarm that mimicked the light show of real jellies in the wild. So it attracted creatures who she could then film with another special tool she invented.
This camera system called the Eye in the Sea that could see without being seen. Most animals in the deep ocean can only see blue light. And so I actually fashioned it to be able to use red light like a sniper scope to be able to sneak up on other animals that it can see, but they can't see it.
Oh, like it's almost like night vision goggles or something.
Ah.
That's exactly what it's like.
And Edie's system worked. The fake jelly lured sea creatures in, and Edie got pictures of them with her red light camera. She captured rare sharks and jellyfish. But the Eye in the Sea really became famous when she turned it on a mysterious creature humans have been looking for centuries.
The monster of Loch Ness?
You're going to find out after the break. So here's how Edie found herself on the hunt to capture an ocean legend on camera. It began in 2010. Edie was giving a talk about her bioluminescent electro-jelly camera system.
Actually, it was a TED talk I gave when I didn't even really understand what TED was. I was invited to give this talk, and there was a giant squid hunter in the audience, and he got incredibly excited. And he said, well, do you think that would work for giant squid? I said, yeah, I think it might. I mean, these animals have the largest eyes of any in the animal kingdom. I think we've been scaring them away all these years. And so he got me invited on this expedition off Japan. It was a six-week trip actually funded by television because footage of a giant squid in its natural habitat was the holy grail of natural history cinematography.
The great white whale.
Yeah, there had been lots of expeditions and all of them had failed.
And did she? Did she crack on the case?
Oh my God, no, you squidded. So Edie set sail with a documentary crew and a team of scientists. And once they were out on the open ocean, about 600 miles off the coast of Japan, they threw Edie's eye in the sea / fake bioluminescent jelly overboard. So picture this. The camera is suspended deep in the open ocean, tethered to a buoy.
All right.
And a day after they drop the camera down, and this is the very first time they put it down in the ocean, they haul it back on board and start to look at the footage.
And because this was a Discovery-funded expedition, they were actually filming.
What is that? Steve? Who?
The first few times we saw it, it was just kind of a tease.
Oh, okay, so.
It waved its arms in front of the camera, but we couldn't see the whole body. But we could tell it was big. And then finally, I think it was on the fourth time we saw it come in on the attack.
Oh, that is so cool.
That is the sound of Edie and the crew seeing the first ever footage of a living giant squid.
They're so excited.
If it had had its tentacles fully extended, it would have been as tall as a two-story building. And they can get as tall as a four-story building.
Were you giant squid obsessed before this?
Not at all. No. I mean, no more than most marine scientists. It's, you know, obviously something that we're all aware of. But no, it was not an obsession.
What about after?
Well, it's becoming more of one. In fact, now I'm having discussions with people about possibly going after colossal squid in the Southern Ocean. And those are particularly intriguing to me because unlike giant squid, colossal squid happen to be bioluminescent. And so that makes them all the more fascinating for me.
Has anyone captured footage of them in the wild?
Never.
I can hear the excitement in your voice.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. To see something for the first time that no one has ever seen, that's, wow. I can't imagine it.
I know, it's hard to fathom.
Yeah, she's really a pioneer in her work.
For sure. So what do you think? Are you going to go Zaifong hunting again?
Definitely. And there are also Twitter accounts in Holland, which is called Zaifong Alert, which gives you a mention if there are Zaifong somewhere. So when I'm able, I definitely would go to the sea to see the Zaifong again.
Eric, Zaifong you for the question.
Graag gedaan, Flora.
Every Little Thing is produced by Stephanie Werner, Emily Foreman, Phoebe Flanagan, Annette Heist, and Flora Lichtman, with help from Nicole Pasulka and Doug Barron. Our consulting editors are Caitlin Kenny and Jorge Just. Scored by Emma Munger, Dara Hirsch, and Bobby Lord. Mixed by Catherine Anderson. Special thanks to Steve Haddock, Michael Latz, Matt Davis, and Severine Martini. Every Little Thing is a Spotify original podcast. I want to be where the people are. I want to see them dancing, walking around on those, what do you call them? Oh, feet.
You're always looking for a better word than bioluminescence. I actually produced a coloring book some years ago, and I desperately tried to come up with another name for it and was going to do the Living Lights coloring book, but I was afraid people would think it was religious. And so finally just went with the bioluminescence coloring book, which I think explains why we've still got several hundred copies on the shelves.
I was thinking about what it could be, like bio bling, natty light.
Okay, I get veto power.
Good. goodbye.